This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Does this sound trigger you? Is this the sound of your Bonnie Doon serenity disappearing? Maybe it's your exciting beach time hobby. Yes, the ever-polarising jet ski. It's in the headlines again. Investigators are looking into numerous reports of people using jet skis to chase and harass dolphins at Phillip Island. Hello, I'm Mary Guerin and this is The Conversation Hour. I want to hear from you about your experiences with the jet ski. If you are a jet ski lover, I want to hear from you. 1300 222 774. Tell me what you make of yet another incident, another news report about incidents over the summer. I googled jet skis and dolphins this morning. Dozens and dozens of incidents reported, not just in the Bass Coast, which is what we were talking about for this particular summer, this particular set of allegations, but all along the Victorian coastline, all around Australia, in fact. What have you seen on the waterways? In terms of jet skis and their closer than desired encounters with wildlife, what have you seen? Or maybe you are a jet ski enthusiast. You think jet skis are getting a bad rap, that most of you are following the rules, and you'd like to see more etiquette. What is the etiquette? How can there be education? The coastline councils have been complaining about this for years. You can see that if you do that Google search. And they're currently working up a push for increased enforcement of personal watercraft regulations by the state government to crack down on the speed of jet skis and also to enforce distances between jet skis and swimmers and wildlife. And apparently, as it stands, it's a bit confusing. What do you think should be done? 1300 222 774 is the number to call, or text 0437 774 774. Chris has texted saying, police it or provide video evidence. If found guilty, crush the jet ski. They'll soon get the message. Do you agree with Chris? What do you think should happen? Also this hour, tell me about your mechanic. Tell me about why your mechanic will never be replaced by AI. I'm asking off the back of an interview we did last week about whether the fuel price squeeze is making you think differently about whether or not you will buy an EV. And it got us thinking about the future of mechanics. Are you a mechanic? Tell me, how is business? 1300 222 774 is the number to call me, or text 0437 774 774. I want to know how well our mechanics are adapting to EVs. We know that that is on the rise slowly in Australia, the purchase of EVs. Are we on track preparing our apprentices for the future in that instance? Could working on EVs attract more women to the trade? But also I want you to tell me about your mechanic, the good stories and the bad stories if you want to, or the young people in your lives who might be looking at it as a career. There are some texts that I need to pre-read before I read them on air about jet skis. It's a polarising subject. I want to hear from you about it. Also, we're going to see what's happening on Spring Street. Are some media outlets right? Is there about to be a coup on the Premier? We'll touch base with one of our state political experts. Also, National Cabinet is happening, and I can see that the Prime Minister is about to speak. We will get to jet skis versus dolphins, and we'll look at what's happening in National Cabinet.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
The Prime Minister is standing up and he is talking about what the National Cabinet has come up with. They've been talking about fuel supplies and distribution. We will get across that and bring it to you. It is coming up to 11 minutes past 11. Well, we are talking about jet skis v dolphins, and apparently this is a showdown that's been happening along the Bass Coast. Joining me now is the Bass Coast Mayor, Rochelle Halsted. Thanks for joining us, Mayor.
Oh, yes. Good morning, Mary. Thanks for having me on your show.
Tell us about what is being investigated at the Bass Coast?
Well, I wish I had more detail for you. Council hasn't had any reports directly made to our organisation. However, they are making inquiries with our emergency services, and tomorrow they have a beach safety gathering which has all the emergency services get together, and I'm sure that it will be at the top of the list for those discussions. You know, Bass Coast residents live alongside our wildlife every day. We're very fortunate to live in a place where we see wildlife regularly, echidnas, wallabies, penguins, dolphins, whales, and we have a real respect for that wildlife. So to hear if this is occurring, it's just heartbreaking to think that jet skiers would pursue dolphins in that way.
Yeah, so just to step back one moment, I should let people know the reports were to the conservation regulator about people using jet skis to chase and harass dolphins at Phillip Island. And in one instance, two jet skis were observed operating dangerously close to the dolphin, one rider repeatedly chasing the animal allegedly and coming close to striking it. On the same day, a jet ski forced the same dolphin into shallow water near swimmers before a passenger jumped into the water and attempted to grab and ride the dolphin. So, Rochelle Halstead, you're saying that you didn't hear this specifically. Is this then a case of people reporting it directly to the regulator?
It sounds like that is what has occurred, Mary, and, you know, that's a good way of going about it. Obviously, it is or should be monitored by the state government. They are the ones that monitor our bays and enforce regulations. It's absolutely heartbreaking to hear this story. And, you know, I do think that there is room for jet skis, but that those who are licensed to ride them need to be obviously following the guidelines, the laws and the regulations. And if they're not able to do that, I think the suggestion that was made earlier about crushing their jet ski might send a message that it's not appropriate to be harassing wildlife, and it's just heartbreaking that they think it is.
If you are a jet ski enthusiast and you say, hey, we are copping the rap for just a few bad apples, I'd like to hear from you because we know that the enthusiasts are out there and there are organisations that do promote etiquette on the water and good behaviour. But we still do have all of these allegations, these incidents, Rochelle Halstead. Are you part of the multi-shire push to get the state government to do more to enforce the rules? And if so, how exactly would the state government do that?
Well, our officers, as I said, they work very closely with the emergency services right across the board of Bass Coast, and these sorts of issues are raised in those meetings regularly. Obviously, I'm not aware of the conversations recently around this particular incident, but I do know that we have a very close relationship with our emergency services, obviously, because we're seeing a lot of, weather emergencies, and so those partnerships have been built. And certainly I have spoken to our head officer in that team this morning, who said, as I say, they're having a beach safety meeting tomorrow, and that will be raised as a concern, those reports. So yes, look, if there is a push to have the state government address this, it would be my feeling that Bass Coast would be a part of that. We are very strongly protecting of our wildlife and our environment in Bass Coast, and we certainly would be a part of anything that's going to continue that protection.
Just finally, Mayor, you talk about the services needing to be part of it. What are we talking about here? Are we talking about basically patrols on every beach throughout the summer? Is that what it's going to have to come to?
Well, I guess, you know, it's very expensive to have people out there patrolling beaches, and, you know, the financial sustainability of local government is really on a knife's edge. So it is something they'll have to, I guess, do some work on and consider what is the best way to ensure that people are following the rules and doing the right thing, and hopefully come up with a plan that will address it.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of people agree with you. I can see on text there are a lot of people who are quite angry about this whole situation. As I say, there are a lot of people out there who like jet skis as well, and I hope to hear from them as well through this hour. Rochelle Halstead, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mary, and thank you for covering this story.
I think it's a really important one. If you can look at the depth and the breadth of passion out there, Bass Coast Mayor Rochelle Halstead there talking about the effort. We will also very soon be talking to someone who can speak from the conservation side of things. But first, the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has been speaking in Hobart after a meeting of National Cabinet. Here's a little of what he had to say.
Thanks for joining us. I'm joined today by Anthea Harris, who we have just appointed the Fuel Supply Task Force Coordinator. Since the conflict began a fortnight ago, my government has been working to protect Australians from the effects of the Middle East war. We've already taken a number of significant and indeed unprecedented actions. This morning I convened the National Cabinet to address fuel security and supply chain preparedness in Australia in response to the conflict in the Middle East. And I thank the premiers and chief ministers who attended this meeting, every one of them, at very short notice. And there was a good feeling of common purpose expressed during that meeting. I want to assure Australians at this time that Australia is well prepared. Our fuel supply is currently secure. However, I want us to be over-prepared. I understand there are Australians in some parts of our nation that are really worried as they watch what is unfolding in the Middle East, and that is understandable. But we're doing all that we can to secure our fuel supply and to get it to the places that need it. I again reiterate today, my message to Australians is please do not take more fuel than you need. That is how you can help. It's the Australian way. To think of others, to think of their neighbours, their community, and also to think of the national interest. Only take what you need. Today, National Cabinet acknowledged that the longer the conflict the Middle East goes, the more significant the impact will be for global supply chains, fuel prices, and the wider economy. And it's also understood by Australians that this is a global issue that we are dealing with. The conflict is an unprecedented shock to global energy markets. The International Energy Agency has called it the biggest in history. Already Australians are feeling the consequences of this. And I'm deeply concerned by attacks on civilian and energy infrastructure, including the latest overnight in Qatar. We condemn Iran's ongoing and reckless reprisal attacks in countries across the region who are not parties to this conflict. We do not want to see the conflict escalate further. Today, the Commonwealth has appointed Anthea Harris, who joins me here, as the Fuel Supply Task Force Coordinator to support coordination across governments and sectors. And there will be an agreement from every state and territory will appoint someone to work with Ms. Harris to make sure that we maximise the coordinated effort during this time. Ms. Harris is formerly the CEO of the Australian Energy Regulator and the former Chief Executive Officer of the Energy Security Board. Prior to this, she was Deputy Secretary of the Energy Group within the Victorian Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning. So I can't think of anyone better with more experience, more knowledge, as well as that experience in a state government to be able to coordinate these efforts. The Fuel Supply Task Force Coordinator will be responsible for the following: leading a new fuel supply task force that will be established in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, driving coordination between the Commonwealth and the states and territories on fuel security and supply chain resilience, providing consistent, coordinated updates to the Commonwealth and states and territories on our fuel supply outlook, and acting as a single convening point for fuel supply and forward planning. This is a sensible measure to put in place.
So that's the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, talking just a few minutes ago in Hobart, appointing Anthea Harris, you heard there, as a National Fuel Supply Task Force Coordinator, or as the headlines say, the fuel czar. And he has also said that the message to Australians is, please do not take more fuel than you need. This is how you can help. That is the Australian way. Tell me what you think about what you've just heard as well. Does that give you confidence that, as many of you have been talking about over the past few weeks, should our politicians be doing more? Can they be doing more to help in this fuel global crisis? A little segue here between that and what we were talking about before. This on text: given we have a potential fuel shortage looming, perhaps jet skis shouldn't be allowed to refuel at the moment. That would give the wildlife a break. Yes, we are talking about jet skis, and it has a lot of you very upset because we're talking about the allegations, the incidents that are being investigated that happened apparently at Phillip Island involving some jet ski operators harassing dolphins. We heard before from the Bass Coast Mayor, Rochelle Halstead, who's saying that, yes, she will be really willing and ready in that shire to work with the state government to crack down on things. At 22 minutes past 11, Ewan Ritchie, the Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Conservation at Deakin University, joins me for his thoughts. Hello, Ewan. Thank you.
Good morning, Mary.
Were you surprised by these reports this morning?
I wouldn't say I'm surprised. I'm shocked. But I think, as you said earlier, unfortunately, this is not the first allegation of incidents like this. We've seen scores of these events over many years, including not just at Phillip Island, but also in Port Phillip Bay, and not just with dolphins, but also with whales. So it's really distressing to hear that people are essentially doing the wrong thing and not respecting the wonderful wildlife that we have in and around our, you know, waterways.
And indeed, when I was looking around this morning, these are incidents not just about Victoria, it's about our whole coastline as well?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a large number of incidents that have occurred within Port Phillip Bay. So obviously that's going to be variable in different parts of Australia, but it's not solely confined to this area.
We are talking about jet skis on our waterways and how they interact with wildlife. 1300 222 774. If you've seen something, or if you are indeed a responsible jet ski operator, I guess respectable will be in the eyes potentially of the owners, but also what does it mean when it comes to the regulations we have around it? Are they confusing or not? I'm joined by Ewan Ritchie, who is Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Conservation at Deakin University. Before we get on to the current regulations, Ewan, what would you have to say about the dangers of jet skis if they are operated in an irresponsible way when it comes to the wildlife?
Yeah, well, there's a whole range of dangers. Obviously, chasing dolphins is going to cause them a large amount of stress. If, unfortunately, they get too close, they might even collide with that animal, which could cause a really nasty gash to the animal or potentially even death. The animals, of course, are quite capable of hurting people as well. So people being stupid enough to try and, you know, jump on a dolphin or a seal or another animal, a whale, you know, they can cause serious harm, if not death. We're talking about whales as a larger species. There's a whole range of potential horrible outcomes that can occur both for the animals themselves, but also for people. And the other thing to bear in mind too is that if people are racing around really quickly on jet skis, they're probably not paying a lot of attention to what's going on around them. And occasionally there's ocean swimmers, and we've had people killed by jet skis swimming, people doing the wrong thing with jet skis. But I'd also just like to make a point too that it's not just jet skis that have done the wrong thing over the years. We do know, of course, of cases of small boats also approaching dolphins and whales too closely and not adhering to the laws.
This on text, Ewan. Hi, Mary. I live in Inverloch and have a jet ski I use for fishing only while offshore in good weather. I have had many encounters with dolphins. They will often travel with me, playing off my bow. One year I had a whale swim through my anchor line and took me for a very scary ride before he got himself free. I'm very much a wildlife advocate and treat the sea and its wildlife with utmost respect. So there's a perspective, Ewan. I guess what would you have to say about the possibility for respectful, mutually respectful interaction between waterways, people who put vehicles on waterways, and the wildlife?
I mean, we just need more people like the person that just texted in. You know, there's nothing necessarily bad per se about a jet ski or a boat or other watercraft. It's how people choose to use them and whether they respect, of course, the laws that have been put in place to protect both wildlife and people. So as long as we do that, there's no reason for any of these, you know, basically bad situations to occur. And as your texter just mentioned too, is that occasionally, you know, dolphins will approach watercraft and ride in the bow waves and so forth. And they can do that as long as we're not deliberately driving towards them and pursuing them. And the law is really clear on that. So if you spot a whale or a dolphin from a distance, you're not allowed to approach it within certain distances, depending on what watercraft you're on. But if they choose to come to you, and as long as you're, you know, careful about that, you know, that's okay.
Just as a final question, Ewan, I was reading that the dolphin researcher, executive director of the Dolphin Research Institute, Jeff Weir, had said that the existing rules were complicated about the different approach distances, jet skis versus boats versus whales versus dolphins. Do you think that part of that really needs to be part of the overhaul, the reforms, because essentially, you know, humans and their behaviour, they need some simple rules?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, I think maybe streamlining it so there's just a set rule for all marine wildlife. I'm not a marine mammal expert, so I just put that on the table, and I'm sure those laws have been probably designed with that in mind in terms of different species and how, you know, worried about watercraft they might be versus others. But, yeah, possibly making the laws simpler. But I think as other, you know, callers have said before too, I think we need to look at, you know, stronger enforcement of those laws too. And if that includes things like a levy on using jet skis so that we can actually have more people patrolling areas to ensure that bad behaviour doesn't occur, and also higher punishments that if, you know, for the minority of people doing the wrong thing, maybe their jet skis get confiscated and that's it. Because we are so lucky in Victoria to have such extraordinary marine wildlife that we can all enjoy, and that's all we want to do, and we just want to make sure that everyone does the right thing.
Ewan, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, Mary.
That's Ewan Ritchie, Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Conservation at Deakin University. Certainly a plethora of texts coming through along those lines about penalties. Jet skis should be banned. There's nothing good about them, says Jane. Alana says, or is it Alan, says jet skis should be registered and have number plates. Then people could report them and the police could find them and fine them. And yes, this from Marge, jet skis, scourge of the waterways, ruining the environment and atmosphere for all others. I would love to have, like that texter before, be part of the conversation, someone who actually enjoys jet skis, who has a potentially a different perspective on what is happening out there. But coming up next, there are some headlines around this morning about a coup on Spring Street. How true are they?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Joining me now is state political reporter Richard Willingham to tell us all about the reports of a coup brewing against the Premier. Hi, Rich.
G'day, Mary.
So it's a sitting day, and so, of course, the Premier was going to be asked about this, even though she was going on to very important business in National Cabinet. And I looked at the quote. I have to go to this first. She says, it's anonymous gossip that could be from a few scallywags out there that might need a bit of a cuddle. I would suggest, Rich, that if this were all true, it sounds like jolly Enid Blyton kind of world out there in Spring Street.
Look, I think if this is, as it's reported, is true, then the Premier is probably the one in the need of the cuddle. But in saying that, there is some serious conversations going on. So I think, just to put it all a bit in perspective, what's happening at the moment, it appears, and I've spoken to dozens of MPs and Labor people over the last sort of 12 hours. And I don't sleep, of course, Mary.
I know that.
But one of the things that is coming up, so there appears to be no one inside the caucus, on or off the record, is willing to say that they are going to challenge the Premier right now and or even think that should be good. Now, that's caucus members. There are people outside the party room, outside the elected people who are talking about perhaps there needs to be a change because the current situation, the status quo, is not working. They point to, you know, published opinion polls that show the Premier is a net negative for the party, that she is potentially a drag on the vote, and she is just not popular with voters. This is the published polling they're relying on. We've seen it in The Age, The Herald Sun, and The Australian, and elsewhere, right? So these are an Australian financial group. The polling is not great for Jacinta Allan. So I think what is happening now, and this is what's happening now, is that MPs and factional power brokers are now having a conversation about whether they should consider changing. So it's not like there's people right now who have probably got the numbers who can say, all right, Jacinta Allan, we're going to challenge you. It's time to move on, resign to save the party. I don't think we're at that stage yet, Mary, but I think that the conversations to have that conversation are certainly happening about what does a plan B look like.
Right. So no fire as such, just the first hint that there might be smoke.
Kindling. There might be some kindling being
kindling.
Laid.
Kindling. Interesting. We will be continuing to hear from you, I'm sure, about that. But how long would you think that it would take? How long before the election can they afford to leave it, if that's what they think?
Well, that's one thing. So people say, well, if you've got to move now, because it gives you a chance to get whoever gets in. The two names thrown out most often are Ben Carroll from the right and Gab Williams from the left. Both of them have publicly dismissed those suggestions today, as you'd expect. Look, these things can snowball pretty quickly, or they can fester for a while and nothing happens. So it's not good news either way for the Premier, the fact that people are having these conversations, and just simply dismiss it as anonymous gossip is an easy thing to do, but there is something happening, there are conversations being happened, and people are looking at what a plan B would look like. And I think that should worry the Premier. It doesn't mean that she's going to get rolled. She probably could easily still be the Premier come election time. But there's just the conversations are a bit louder than they have been. Obviously, there's plenty of issues the Premier is confronting, CFMEU crisis, crime rates still aren't coming down. We saw this morning in the crime stats, and just general unpopularity. So there is people agitating, yes, to consider change. It's certainly happening, but it doesn't appear to be loudest within the caucus just yet.
Rich, you are going to be keeping that ear to the ground and the shoulder to the grindstone. thank you so much for giving us a bit of a temperature test of what's happening out there.
Anytime.
That's Rich Willingham, of course, your state political reporter. We're talking about that. We're talking about the announcement this morning of a so-called fuel czar out of National Cabinet. We are also talking about jet skis. We've been discussing your views on what can and should be done when it comes to jet skis and wildlife. And I've been wanting to speak with someone who actually is an enthusiast of jet skis and can give us that perspective. Chris, you're calling from Rye. You manufacture jet skis, is that right?
I'm getting on in my years. I've been manufacturing jet skis in Australia and our factory in Thailand for the last 15 years. I was in the surf industry for 20 years and I've been a surfer since I was 13 years old. So I've lived in the water, basically.
Right.
And I think there's a couple of things. There are some absolute hoons that use jet skis and they need to be dealt with. And I don't think there's any question about that. So the first thing is there are rules. Jet skis do have to be registered, and they have a number on them, and it's about enforcement. And I had one experience, and this is what I sort of really got me going. Mm. One time I was on a solo jet ski, just riding by myself in Western Port Bay, and a dolphin came up and literally played with me in the jet ski for over half an hour. So it was a beautiful experience.
I'm sure. And we did hear from Ewan before, the conservation expert, who was saying that that is something that they will do. It's just, I guess, about education of that rider to not take it too far, not to do the wrong thing.
Exactly. Be aware of your surroundings. And that was another comment that's made, that they're going fast, they're not aware. Well, they need to be aware, otherwise there can be some pretty terrible accidents. And the other thing I want to say is, people have this thing about jet skis, and I don't, you know, it's been going on for a long time. But boats, there's probably more boats in the water, and there's a lot of damage done by people throwing rubbish out of the boats and boats not obeying the rules and so on. It all gets back to enforcement, and I don't think you can say, oh, it's just ban jet skis.
Chris, that's really interesting. Yes, you're right. The wildlife is facing challenge on many different fronts, and including that rubbish as well. Thank you so much for calling. Really good to hear another perspective. Nathan, you're in Torquay. You're into jet skis as well.
Yeah. So Chris actually hit the nail on the head there with pretty much everything I was going to say about registration, about dolphins. I have the exact same story that I was going to tell.
Yeah.
About myself, on multiple occasions, pods of dolphins coming and jumping in front of the jet ski, just playing with it.
Do you know, Nathan, then what to do in that circumstance? Like, do you have, well, have you sort of looked into the proper behaviour to respect the wildlife? I as we've heard, it's apparently, yes, the dolphins come up to you. It does make it easy to avoid them then. But do you know what to do then personally? Are you confident about that?
Well, honestly, sometimes we shut the jet ski off because we don't want to disturb them, but they hang around. And then the second we boot it back up, they're under the ski again, jumping in front of it. We can be going, I don't know, I might be selling something out here, but we could be going 50 Ks an hour and they'll be keeping up with us in front of the jet ski, playing with us. They're not bothered at all. Obviously, we don't go and approach them ourselves, but if they entertain it, it's quite fun and it's quite magical.
I'm sure it would be. Nathan, do you think that most other jet ski operators think like you do? Or let's put it this way. Do you think that there's a purpose in potentially an education campaign for jet ski operators?
Absolutely. I absolutely love that idea. I use my ski in big wave surfing as a safety operator. So I've got a bit of a different perspective compared to like a river hoon. It's disappointing to see people absolutely abuse and misbehave on skis because then we, the people who use them correctly, suffer as well. My local boat ramp, I use it as to try and fish from, but we're not allowed to launch jet skis from it for this exact reason of dangerous behaviour.
Yep, you get the blowback as well from those people who do the wrong thing. Nathan, really appreciate you calling in. I'd love to hear different perspectives on these issues. Thank you. And there are so many more texts as well. Talking about jet skis, saying that, look, it's not a jet ski at fault, it's a small number of irresponsible humans, but a lot of people who have had some bad experiences. I will get to more of those texts in this hour as well. But coming up next also, I want to hear from you, your mechanic. The mechanic in your life, while your mechanic will never be replaced by a bot. We're going to be talking about the future for mechanics.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Yes, you're with Mary Guerin. It's The Conversation Hour. And the conversation I want to go to is about the future for mechanics. Are you a mechanic? How is business? With all this talk of a move to EVs, what does being a mechanic look like right now and what do you think it will become? I'd love to hear from you. If you are a mechanic, if your young one is becoming a mechanic, if you've got a mechanic that you love, tell me the good and the bad stories. Joining me now, Peter Jones is CEO of the Victorian Automotive Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Peter.
Good morning, Mary.
Tell me, what do you believe is the future for mechanics in this ever-changing industry, this ever-changing world with so many different pressures on traditional cars, on fuel prices? Where's it going?
Well, it's certainly an interesting time to be in the industry, I've got to say. Look, I think the industry is changing, there's no doubt about it, and there is certainly a move to electrification. But the good news is that for a long, long, long time ahead, we will still have ICE vehicles on the road, and we will still need mechanics to repair them. The issue, I suppose, is, and the guesstimate anyway, by 2030 from the industry is that there'll still be 20.8 million ICE vehicles on the road.
ICE vehicles?
Internal combustion engines. So the cars that we are used to will be on the road. There is a growing number of new EVs, PHEVs and BEVs that are being sold at the moment, so battery electric, plug-in hybrids and hybrids. And probably by that time, there'll be cars on the road. About 70% of new cars will be sold with some type of electrification.
So obviously, we will always need mechanics, but their jobs will look very different, I'm assuming. What's the sort of transition, if you're talking about by 2030, 20%, yep. Does that mean that the apprenticeships need to start changing right now or yesterday?
Yeah, our apprenticeships are changing, and they already have. The VACC is Australia's largest employer of automotive apprentices. Up to last week, we've just hit our 600 mark. So we have 600 apprentices that work in our members, but that are actually employed by the VACC. And we're involving in that training today. And for those people that have been in the industry for a while, we also have training that upskills them in this EV space. And to that extent, we've bought a new building in North Melbourne that's going to be totally dedicated to EV training and the provision of certificate 2 and 3 courses on EV.
So, you know, there's the cliched mechanic, I guess it's informed by Hollywood as well, you know, the grease covered underneath the car, the nuts and the bolts and so forth. Is it going to be a little bit less that? I'm sure it still will be a factor. Much more about engineering, about a tech job?
Look, I think probably Hollywood hasn't done the industry any favours at all. If you go to a repair shop now, you won't find it like that. Our members are true professionals. They're very, very clever in being able to diagnose the issue and repair it. It will change, obviously, with batteries and more battery cars in terms of the, whether it be hybrid or full battery, that will change. Is it more technology? Yes, it's more technology, but the basic skills of being able to diagnose problems and being able to repair them will continue on. So the way they do it may change, but what the fundamentals of it won't.
And you're listening to Peter Jones, who is CEO of the Victorian Automotive Chamber of Commerce. Peter, we know that it's been a decades-long battle to try and get more women into trades. Is the EV revolution going to be helpful for that?
Look, I don't think so. I think that the fact is we've had trouble getting women into these type of roles. At the moment, we're probably at 2 or 3%, but we are encouraging at every opportunity for everybody to join this industry. We have a goal of, within the next 5 years, getting our apprenticeship numbers up to over 800, and we are recruiting for apprentices right now. Right now, we're recruiting. We want more across all of the auto industry.
How many more do you need?
Well, it's a bottomless requirement, right, to be quite frank, at the moment, because things are changing. People need to be educated differently, but we've got an aging population in this space, so we need more apprentices today. How many do I want? Within the next 3 years to 4 years, we would like to have another 200 on our books, but the industry needs a whole lot more. And the skills that are required are changing, and we are making sure that our apprentices are trained for those changes, and that for our current mechanics, they can be upskilled to meet those challenges as well.
Give me the pitch, Peter. Can you make a good living as a mechanic?
Absolutely, you can make a good living as a mechanic.
How good?
A very good living as a mechanic.
Okay, you sound like you're sitting on a little secret there that we should all be part of.
It's just one of those things we get asked very regularly. And when we talk to our apprentices, they're very happy about what the future holds for them. And, as I say, they start off and they do build up very, very quickly. And the fact that they're in demand today is fantastic for them, because people pay to get the skills they need. So if you want to be an apprentice, come and talk to us now.
There you go. You've got a bit of a pitch there from the Victorian Automotive Chamber of Commerce. And I'll just reflect on a text that I've got here, Peter. Oh, I don't think I can give out the name of the place in Preston that Justin is recommending Brad work. It says that Brad, in this place in Preston, is an extremely honest and knowledgeable person. I guess growing up, Peter, there was, and still to this day, there is always that word of mouth. People have to say, do you know a good mechanic? Because, you know, there are the bad apples, the people who they feel have ripped them off in an area that they know nothing about. I confess myself to be one of those people. I need to be able to trust my mechanic. What would you have to say about the credibility level of mechanics and what the industry is doing to improve that sort of perception or reality?
Yeah, well, what I would say is our industry is full of very, very clever people. But what I would recommend anybody out there do is look for the VACC sign outside any mechanic shop that you go to. We know that they are trained. We know that they have access to the best information available. You have the backing of the VACC.
There you go. Peter Jones, thank you for your time today.
Thanks very much.
Peter Jones, CEO of the Victorian Automotive Chamber of Commerce. We have been talking about this, the future of mechanics. Also, we've been talking about jet skis. Lots of texts still coming through. Hi, Mary. Why do jet skis need to be near swimmers or close to the beach? The whole idea of jet skis is speed and riding over the ocean. No need to be close to the beach. This is in response, of course, to investigations into a few incidents over the summer at Phillip Island. We've heard there from the mayor there and an environmental expert, and also from a few of you in the audience who are listening who say, hey, we like our jet skis and we are responsible. It is about the person, not the vehicle. But Maggie in Werribee says, do what they did with people who were caught hooning with their cars, confiscate them and crush them. That is a big recurring theme on text. I'd still love to hear from you about all of your thoughts on jet skis. But on mechanics as well, we were hearing then from Peter Jones. Alex, you've called in from North Warrandyte. You're a mechanic?
Yeah, I'm a mobile plant technician. So we work on heavy equipment, so bulldozers, dump trucks, excavators. Industry's really changing now. I finished my apprenticeship a couple of years ago. And even in the last couple of years, it's changed. We've leaned a lot towards AI. We have an app now that we can use to ask questions. The accuracy of it is still questionable. But
what do you mean by that?
You still have to refer to physical documents. Like, I've used it to pin out relays before and have been given incorrect answers, and that's by large brand AI and also our internal systems.
So that means...
It's a really... Yes?
No, you go.
Sorry. It's a really good trade to get into. You make a very good living, and definitely changing.
Yeah, but as you say, it's really in that evolutionary stage when it comes to AI. You're still learning, as we are all learning.
So. Yeah, very much so. It allows a lot of people to do a lot more, especially on the customer side, which isn't necessarily a good thing in our industry when everything's a lot more expensive compared to light vehicles. But it's moving towards allowing people to repair stuff themselves, but also removing the opportunity, because now shop manuals and stuff are going to books and subscriptions, where it's pulling away from the right to repair, which is also its own issue.
Yeah. Alex, that's really interesting. Thank you so much for calling in. It sounds like there's a lot of interest in the future of mechanics out there as well. Austin from Tullamarine says the issue is not technology, but trying to find an honest and trustworthy mechanic. We did hear there, though, talk to the Victorian Automotive Chamber of Commerce if you have problems. It is coming up to 10 minutes to 12. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about people who might be trying to sidestep those large real estate marketplaces when they're looking at selling their houses.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, we've been talking about a brand new world for mechanics. It's also a brand new world for selling property. We've been looking into this story about selling property on social media that is evading those realestate.com.au domain, big real estate marketplaces. In our real estate industry, agents will tell you, you need to go to one of those marketplaces. You do need to. You have to pay the bucks to get on there, because otherwise you're not going to get in front of enough eyeballs. Well, there might be a way of sidestepping them. Some people have been going straight to social media. Have you done it yourself? Would you trust a sales pitch on social media for a house? Have you or your agents decided to ditch those bigger, more traditional routes? Piyush Tiwari is Professor of Property at the University of Melbourne and has been looking at this. Hello, Piyush.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
Yes, good, thank you. Tell me, how many people are doing this? How prevalent is this, going straight to social media to sell a house?
If we look at the statistics at the moment, it's not a very large number, but it's growing in terms of its reach, as well as widening the number of people who are trying to reach potential consumers through social media.
So what would be the, we'll go for the pros and the cons. What is the advantage of going through social media?
I'll provide a broader context for this discussion so that it can help listeners understand the impact that selling cost has on affordability. A median house price in Australian cities is about $860,000, and the median income is about $104,000. So we are basically looking at 8 years of income to pay for housing. So that's the kind of housing affordability statistics tells us. Now, when we look at the cost of, say, selling property, it's about $20,000 that goes towards the payment to for the agent as well as listing and so on. So, and on top of that, there is a stamp duty of about $50,000 for a median house. So effectively, these two together is about 8%. Now, this gets transferred to the buyers.
Yeah. So
the buyers are, yeah.
Sorry to cut you off there, Piyush. What you're saying is obviously there's a cost incentive to bypass, you know, those extra costs, which might be putting them on the bigger marketplaces. But I can imagine there are risks with that as well, potentially when it just comes to trust.
I think that's number one. Trust is an important one. So there are lots of scams related to property through social media or online portals that have happened where Australians have lost money. So trust is still a question, particularly when we are looking at some of these online social media type of portals there. But over a period of time, slowly that trust is building as more information becomes available and gets on through social media, Facebook markets, and so on.
Mm. And I can imagine also there's not just the scams, but there's also AI. So many of us are looking at videos that we see on social media and wondering if any of it's true. And it's pretty high stakes if you're looking at a house being sold.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's another big area. Artificial intelligence, when it started coming on the market, the chances of errors are very high, but over a period of time, it has the AI is training itself, and what it is making available now is the content, which is far more reliable compared to, say, a year ago or 2 years ago. So it requires a lot of information to train the algorithms and so on, but it's getting there. And slowly it's becoming much more reliable.
So Piyush, just to finish up, what would you say is a bit of advice to people who are looking at these sort of things on social media?
I think if I were to stand today and say that whether 100% go with the social media pitch, one has to take that with a pinch of salt. So there is information out there. It's easier to sell. The due diligence is still an important part, but that's something which buyers would have to do irrespective of whether they are looking at any of those listing sites or social media. So that doesn't eliminate the requirement that one has to go out, look at the property, do the due diligence before putting their hard-earned money.
Always caveat emptor. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That's Piyush Tiwari, Professor of Property at the University of Melbourne. I want to bring in really quickly a real estate agent who I think has used this, Luke Saville, who's director of Savvy, joins me now. Hi, Luke. Have you used social media for this?
We have, Mary. Yeah. Thanks
without,
for having us on.
No worries. Without going through those big behemoth marketplaces?
Yeah. So it's quite remarkable, but like this week will notch our 50th sale directly through social media, no advertising expenses whatsoever, in just over 12 months.
Okay, so the pitch generally from real estate agents is, look, you're just not going to get the eyeballs if you don't go in those bigger places, even if you have to pay up. What would you have to say to that?
I'd say that is somewhat true. Where we're quite different is our business is purely apartments. So we're just very much a very niche business where we specialise in the apartment market. So our following is quite large, and the people who are following us are looking to buy apartments. We'll always give the clients two options. So the first option is to run it for 2 weeks through social media. Don't pay anything. It doesn't cost you a thing. If you get a great offer, terrific. You can sell. You can save the $7,000-$10,000 on advertising. If you don't, then you can move forward with the traditional campaign, and you've got all of that feedback from people that have come through the door.
I think you were listening in when I was speaking to Piyush there about those trust issues, whether it's through scams that often are on social media, AI, as we know, is a problem. How do you address that issue of trust?
Well, this is about to change very soon with the new AML laws that are coming in for the new financial year. But at the moment, we haven't had we really haven't run into an issue with scamming. I know that they're out there, but very rarely have we sold a property directly through social media where the buyer has not then come and met us first, inspected the property, and then bought it. So we're not selling them without ever meeting somebody. I mean, it did happen once, actually, a few months ago, but yeah, I haven't had any issues with it.
Yeah, it happened a fair bit through COVID, but I think there are a lot of mistakes happened then as well, so people learnt their lesson. Tell me, those changes that you refer to, how will they affect you?
In a positive way. People just have to be able to register when they come to an open for inspection. We need a lot more information from them so that we know that there's no scamming happening.
Luke, thank you for talking to us today.
Pleasure. Thanks, Mary.
That's Luke Saville, for the director of Savvy, and we're talking about using social media. And David has called, texted saying, if I was to sell my property, I would not use a real estate agent ever again. With one of those marketplaces being the main source for buyers, why would you give an agent tens of thousands of dollars to sell it? Yes, I wonder if that is the way of the future. That's all for today. Thank you very much for joining me in a very lively conversation. I'm still getting texts about jet skis. I think that's another conversation hour. In fact, if you have a suggestion about what we should be covering, conversationhour@abc.net.au. I look at that email address and I would love to hear from you. Also, if you want to hear this again, the Conversation Hour podcast is in on your ABC Listen app. Thank you very much. Have a great day today and join me again tomorrow in the Conversation Hour.